Good evening and welcome once again to your legal rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Dean Johnson, sitting in for Jeff Hayden. Landlords and tenants, where do we stand? With the fading of the pandemic, both the moratorium on evictions and state assistance for renters are rapidly fading into the rearview mirror. So where are we now? We have a lot to talk about, and so do you. We call this a call-in show for a reason. We want you in the conversation. So call us at 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134 in the Bay Area. Or if you're outside the local dialing area, you can call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Please bear in mind that we have attorney guests tonight and that every case is different, so our guests cannot provide you with specific advice about particular cases, but they are here to educate you about your legal rights. And remember also that the opinions expressed by our guests and our hosts may not necessarily be the opinions of KALW or their employers or their clients. Our phone number again, 815-841-4134. Joining us tonight, our panel of landlord-tenant experts. For some 20 years, San Francisco landlord-tenant attorney Jessica Shayak has represented clients in rent board actions, mediations, and court. Jessica launched her practice to specialize in San Francisco residential evictions, vacancy agreements, and rent board petitions for tenants, landlords, master tenants, and subtenants. San Mateo attorney David Finkelstein is a graduate of NYU Law School. David is admitted to practice in both California and New York. He began his career as a staff attorney in California for the National Housing Law Project at Bolt Hall Law School. David has been representing clients in real estate and landlord-tenant matters for some 40 years. And David has published articles about protection for renters during the COVID-19 crisis. Also joining us tonight is San Francisco attorney Salvatore Timpano. Sal is considered one of the top attorneys in the Bay Area to practice in the area of landlord-tenant law, representing both landlords and tenants in the area of eviction. Sal, David, Jessica, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello, Dean. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you, Dean. I appreciate it.
Glad to be here, Dean.
All right. Glad to have you all. Let's look back a little bit. Obviously, the pandemic changed the entire landscape of landlord-tenant relations. And I wonder if for those of us who may not be familiar with that history, I'll throw this out to all three of you. Can you tell us just exactly what has happened in the last couple of years with the pandemic and landlord-tenant legal affairs?
Well, if I start off, this is David speaking, between 10/1/2021 and the end of this month, 3/31/2022, Almost all the courts in the state will only enable eviction based on non-payment to commence if the landlord has first attempted to get rental assistance to cover the unpaid amount and the application has either been denied or 20 days have passed and there's no sign that the tenant is going to cooperate. There was also a similar kind of commercial ban, San Francisco had special rules on commercial payments, and a lot of local jurisdictions enacted rules that were even more stringent and banned evictions totally they all required to applications to housing is key. So I don't want to monopolize this because I'm sure the other speakers can f- follow up and expand on what I've said.
Well, you're not monopolizing, but I think what we need to do is break this down a little bit. As I understand it, there were two things. There was what we call a moratorium on rent, but then there was also something called rental assistance, and the two worked hand in hand. Is that about right, Jessica? And can you explain that a little bit more?
Yes, thank you, Dean. Basically, the moratorium was on non-payment of rent evictions due to COVID-19 financial problems. Okay, so the state said if you have COVID-19 related financial problems, you've lost your job, you had to take leave to take care of somebody else, or you got COVID yourself, something like that, something that's directly related to COVID issues. If you then can't pay your rent, then we're not going to evict you on that, you have to file a declaration of financial hardship with your landlord, and you have to meet certain other requirements, pay 25% of rent if you can at any point during the rental period where you're not paying. And so that was the first part. That's the moratorium. And so that expired the end of September last year. October 1st was the first day that you could actually potentially file new eviction lawsuits. And then the second part that you mentioned is the rent relief program, which is a state program that is funded by both state and federal pandemic relief funds. And they just announced yesterday that they received an additional $136 million funds from the federal pandemic relief programs. The application deadline is March 31st, and it would cover rent for the 18 months prior to that. The website for that is housing.ca.gov, and that you can apply. Tenants can apply for rent and utility assistance, and landlords can apply for rental assistance.
So who can apply for this rental assistance? It sounds like, first of all, this rental assistance program is going beyond the pandemic. It's looking to the future, and who can apply for it, and how long is this going to last?
Well, as I just said, landlords can apply for rent relief for residential programs, and this is residential rent relief. And so landlords can apply, and tenants can apply for rent relief and utility assistance as well.
And this the moratorium and rental assistance doesn't apply to everybody, but there were a lot of people, a lot of residents, a lot of businesses who found themselves in dire straits during the pandemic and still do. If they're not eligible for rent moratorium or rental assistance, are there other things that they can do, Salvador?
Hi, Dean. So in my experience, a lot of residential tenants are not applying for the relief. They're resisting it, and the landlords can't apply for it on their own. It requires the tenants to start the process to see if they qualify. Most of them, in my opinion, that aren't applying would qualify. They're unemployed and they can't pay their rent. That's pretty much the ingredients for qualification. But for some reason that it's been more than months. It's been a year. I just don't understand why a large amount of tenants, long-time tenants, long-term tenants, are not applying for it. And at some point, they may not be able to be evicted for the unpaid rent for certain periods of time, but they can always be sued in a civil suit for a breach of contract. There's no moratorium on those. So, and I speak to these tenants, and they don't sound incapable of doing it, but they just don't want, even if they tell me they're going to do it, they don't do it. I'm calling on behalf of a landlord. Sometimes the tenant is my client, and I try to convince them to do it. instead they're kind of left wide open, and they're probably going to get a, you know, I don't know exactly what's going to happen, but I don't think that they're going to be able to get assistance in a breach of contract case as they can in a eviction action, you know, or to prevent an eviction. So
that's it.
Jessica, you were going to comment?
I was just going to say that's a key thing that you just mentioned, Sal, is that this rent is not forgiven or waived. It is simply delayed. And there are other methods to go after it. As Sal said, a breach of contract case. They've even changed the small claims rules to allow COVID-related rent payment, you know, rent, non-payment of rent, non-eviction cases, breach of contract in small claims over the $10,000 limit.
Yeah, and I, you know, some of the tenants may feel that, you know, their situation is so bad, they lost their jobs, they don't have any income, they don't have any assets, so who cares? It's really not the best way for them to handle it, especially if they have a long-term tenancy and they enjoy living in the Bay Area. I don't know how, you know, I try to spread the word as much as I can. The funds are there to be distributed and they should just apply. And if they get denied, so be it. But they're probably not going to get denied. The funds are there to be distributed and to maintain housing. For the landlords, the flip side, you know, they're being told by many lawyers, including me, look, it's just, you can't evict right now. And the rules have changed on the evictions. They're changing. We got a new rule 2 days ago. Now landlords have to send a 10-day warning letter before they can send the eviction notice. So yeah, it's 10 days plus whatever. Jessica? You were going to say?
That's just in San Francisco. That's a local rule.
Yeah, it's a local rule in San Francisco. And there's still new rules coming down all the time. And there's different layers. There's the San Francisco. If you're out of San Francisco, there's city and county, state, federal, you know, there's new rules coming in, and some of them don't even work well with each other. So anyway, in answer to your question, Dean, I think that the most important thing for tenants to do that can't pay their rent is to apply. It goes for commercial tenants too, but it's different. And I haven't handled very many commercial tenants that can't pay. I think they're a little more savvy in seeking money that's available. So I've only had one, and they got the relief and they were able to pay the rent and, you know, maintain the relationship.
Well, I want to talk about
I do a little bit more commercial work, and several jurisdictions, including San Francisco and San Jose, have, if it's a small business under 15 employees or whatever, they break up that half the rent is due now that was prohibited before, and the other half is due next year in 2023. And some of these, especially the restaurants, some of them have been able to get the government funding and been able to do that, whereas there have been some commercial tenants that didn't apply or didn't know how to apply for the federal aid. And for whatever reason, I'm like Sal, I don't know why they didn't.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about landlord and tenants options. But first, for our listeners, I want to remind you, we're talking about landlord rights and tenant rights tonight. I'm sure many of you have some questions. And if you have questions for our guests, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. Or if you're outside of the Bay Area, you can call us toll free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And as always, you don't have to talk about the very topic that we're discussing on the air at the time. Any questions about landlord-tenant rights are here, and we've got a stellar panel of guests who can answer those questions. So back to our discussion, I think David raises an interesting point. People are talking about rent moratoriums and rental assistance, but there are a lot of cases where that doesn't apply, or it might not be the best option for the landlord or the tenant. What are some of the other options that landlords and tenants have in these difficult times in working out their arrangements?
Well, a lot of landlords, I do mostly landlord representation, although I have a few tenants that I represent. And during the pandemic, most of the landlords, at least the ones I represented, were giving discounts, substantial discounts to the tenants, like one third or as much as one half, but usually about a third off. And in the alternative, they were offering generous buyouts of the lease, waiving back rent plus giving sometimes more than $5,000 for the tenant to leave. So that's sort of been my experience, that buyouts and discounted rents, and most landlords, in my experience, were doing that.
David, I have a question, actually, about the discounted rents. Were those permanent discounts, or were they temporary discounts for the pandemic?
I believe they were temporary discounts, yes. Temporary for 6 months or a year, something.
In some sort of written modification to your rental agreement.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah,
thank you.
And also, you guys, I noticed that in my practice, a lot of landlords were amenable to accepting less than full rent. To help the tenants get on track. The concern was maybe the tenants will take the less than full rent now, and then maybe it might become their new rent for the future, or that they'll fall back off the financial wagon, so to speak, and then not be able to pay. Haven't had that problem so far. Some landlords have accepted reduced rent, and then they got COVID relief funds as well, and it sort of worked out okay for some of them. Others are just, they want to evict because they're not getting paid and they're not even getting COVID relief funds through the tenants. So they can't wait to evict. And I believe in San Francisco, the eviction moratorium may end at the end of this month, but I heard there's talk about it being extended by San Francisco in a way that looks like it might even contradict state law, but not really. There may be some loophole. Have you guys heard about that?
Yeah, I don't think it's good. I haven't heard that it's going to get extended in San Francisco. And in fact, in Alameda County, there's a challenge in federal court, because Alameda County has had a moratorium on all evictions for all reasons for the entire pandemic.
Ah, wow. Wow, that's pretty strict. Well, I'm going to be monitoring to see if our San Francisco one is extended. Otherwise, come March 31st, it appears that there'll be no eviction moratorium, which means the courts could get cluttered with, non-payment of rent cases, primarily, because the other cases you could still bring, nuisance cases, all the other just cause can still be brought. The caveat is there'll be this 10-day notice in San Francisco that's required, a 10-day warning letter. And then after that, then the eviction notices can be served unless the moratorium is extended in San Francisco. So.
Well, we have a caller. Alyssa from San Bruno is on the line. Alyssa, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, you're on the air.
Yeah, it's sort of along those same lines. So I have a property in San Bruno with a tenant in there. And that tenant's on a month-to-month, and I'm wondering if I have any rights to eviction on a month-to-month lease under this moratorium.
Is it a single-family house?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Is it how many units do you have?
It's a single-family home.
Yeah, I think you can evict with a 60-day notice, The only question is whether you have to comply with the good cause requirement to give 1 month's free rent or not, or whether you're exempt because you're a single family house. I don't know. What do you think, Sal?
I agree, David. So I think this takes us back to 2019, the Tenant Protection Act, which would include single family homes as part of the rent control and eviction control, unless the landlord knew to exclude it. So if the tenancy was in effect in 2019, from January 1st, 2019, the single family home would have had to have been excluded. Otherwise, that tenancy is going to be under the Tenant Protection Act. If it's month-to-month tenancy, they're allowed to evict for just cause under the act. If it's not under there, then they just serve a 30-day notice and evict. But otherwise, they'll have to have just cause and comply with that. Does that maybe you need to ask your question one more time if I left anything out of my response?
Yeah. What would be considered just cause?
So they're listed in the statute, the Tenant Protection Act, and the first just cause is non-payment of rent. The next one is nuisance. I think the third one's breach of contract. Those are probably the three most popular as far as reasons to evict.
Another one is substantial remodeling that would take more than 30 days, such as ripping out the kitchen and the bathroom, and I've had many landlords who use that. So those are the just cause. If you want to list and sell the property, that's another just cause. But you can't just evict if you want to get rid of this tenant and replace him or raise the rent. That's not a just cause.
Right.
Okay. And what if I wanted to move back into that property? Would that be considered just cause?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, owner move-in eviction is always considered just cause because there is a state law that favors home ownership and the ability to occupy.
Right. I've taken the position with my firm that on unless the landlord absolutely insists otherwise, that when I do this 60-day notice with just cause, I list the just cause, whatever it is, and I offer that tenant 1 month's free rent, usually the last month if he cooperates and moves out voluntarily. And so far, I've been pretty successful. In the long run, it saves the landlord filing an unlawful detainer and all of those fees.
Great. Thank you so much for this great advice. Much appreciated.
Thanks for calling, Alyssa. And just a reminder that KALW and Your Legal Rights has been keeping listeners informed about their legal rights for over 40 years. But we can't keep doing that, and we can't pay our own rent unless you contribute. And now is your opportunity to be a part of KALW and Your Legal Rights programming. Help us continue to provide this tremendous resource by calling 1-800-525-9917 or go online at kalw.org and make your contribution today. And I believe we have Colleen from San Francisco.
Yeah, hi.
Colleen, hi.
I'm trying to figure out whether it is true that if a tenant is in an apartment or some rental unit, that after 30 days they have the privilege of staying there and may not necessarily have to pay rent.
That's not true as far as I... and what city are you in?
I'm in San Francisco, but I also wanted to know about California.
Even in San Francisco, I don't think that's true. Jessica can... usually the tenant has to be there for 1 year before he gets the rights under the Rent Control Act. Jessica, what do you think about that?
Well, no, I don't think so. I think that they get the just cause eviction protections after 30 days, and then they get the rent raising, the rent control of, you know, the control of the actual rent change after the 1 year tenancy, because you can't, you would have to only be able to raise it at the 1 year mark anyway.
Okay. And then the other is, as far as the breach of contract, is that like very cost prohibitive to pursue, and sort of how long does it take and stuff like that?
You mean for a landlord to bring a breach of contract action?
Correct.
Yep. So Jessica had mentioned earlier in the program that the small claims courts have opened up to landlords seeking exactly that. So that would be an inexpensive and relatively fast process. If the amounts exceed the jurisdictional amount set for that, then it would be a civil court action in either limited or unlimited jurisdiction. That would be a little bit more expensive, and lawyers would probably be required, at least recommended. But for small claims court, it's, you know, no lawyers. So no, you know, no party brings a lawyer unless it's a corporation. But otherwise, it's all pro per litigants, and the system is set up for the matters to be resolved within the day of the hearing. So the trial is short. You know, there's, you know, within 1 day, the trial starts and ends in 1 day.
Yeah, on a small claims hearing, it's usually 15 to 30 minutes. They really don't give you very long.
Even better.
But, you know, if all you're showing is that they didn't pay the rent, and you need to get that, or they've breached a contract otherwise and you need monetary damages, you know, that's not that hard for you to show right away. And I want to make a point here. You breach of contract lawsuits, whether in small claims or in regular civil court, don't necessarily, they don't result in eviction. Okay, if you want to evict somebody, you have to have a basis to evict them, and breach of contract can be one. But they're separate lawsuits. Eviction is about possession of the unit, and a breach of contract case is about monetary compensation for something the tenant did or didn't do, or the landlord did or didn't do.
Except I filed more than a few cases. In fact, the majority of the cases in the last year or two have been where there is, you know, like a nuisance, which might also constitute a breach of the contract. I had a few where the tenants were hoarders and you couldn't even open the door to the house, and they were also storing a property on the landings and in the hallways. And I was successful in doing that as a breach of contract, but you've got to give the 3 days to cure. And so under certain circumstances, if you're talking about that breach of contract, you can evict.
Are those, David, unlawful detainers, though, that you are talking about?
Yes.
Unlawful detainers. Yeah. Right. I agree with what you said and with what Jessica said. Small claims court doesn't have jurisdiction to evict. So the litigant, the plaintiff can only collect, you know, money from small claims court. But in the court above small claims court, which is superior court, that's what David was just talking about, you can bring your actions for breach of contract and seek eviction in that through the unlawful detainer lawsuit. Yeah?
So Colleen,
have
you answered your questions?
I just want to make sure that I understand what you're saying is that the eviction would have to go to the pursuit of the eviction would have to go to a higher court.
That's right.
And I'm just wondering that if you went through the smaller court, but the tenant couldn't pay. You know, you would have to go to the next step. Is that correct? If you were going to try to ever get compensation for that property?
No, not necessarily, because a small claims judgment is also collectible. The problem is if you've got a tenant who is lower income or even lower middle income, a lot of times they are what's called judgment proof. I mean, you could get a judgment from a court that says you're entitled as a landlord to the money for a breach of contract or whatever, but you wouldn't have the ability to collect it because the tenant doesn't make enough money to actually pay you.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't matter whether the judgment came from small claims court or from superior court.
I see.
Does that answer your question?
I think so.
Colleen,
thanks
for calling. We've got to take a break to let our station identify itself. This is Your Legal Rights on KALW.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information. And before we return to Your Legal Rights, I want to remind you that KALW has just started its spring membership campaign, and we're asking you to step forward and help us out with a contribution of support at 800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917 or online at kalw.org. Why should you support us? Well, KALW is the only station that has a Your Legal Rights program. We have a unique service, a valuable community resource that has probably helped hundreds of listeners during the many, many years that this program has been on the air, and it's been made possible by your support. So if you've gotten some good tips or helpful suggestions on a difficult legal problem, a landlord-tenant situation, tax questions, or debtor relief, show us how much you appreciate our efforts keeping your legal rights going for all these years by calling in your support right now at 800-525-9917, 800-KALW-917, or go online, kalw.org. And thanks. Dean, back to you.
And you're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM. I'm Dean Johnson, sitting in for your regular host, Jeff Hayden. And tonight, we're fortunate to have with us three top experts in the area of landlord-tenant law, David Finkelstein, Sal Campano, and Jessica Chilek. So give us a call at 415-841-4134 or outside the dialing area 866-798-8255. And I see we have Ken from San Francisco on the line. Ken, are you there?
Question. I'm a tenant, and I have been for 30 years, so my sympathies are with tenants. That said, I didn't hear anyone distinguishing very clearly the difference between winning a judgment for non-payment of rent, which seems straightforward, versus collecting a judgment. If a tenant can't pay 1 month's rent and they're behind, then how in the world are they going to pay 10 months? I'm a little annoyed with our politicians who declared a moratorium on rent payment but never closed the loop and gave a way to discharge that huge accumulated debt. So a landlord, I would think, seeking a return of their property basically wants the tenant out. But how in the world are they going to collect against all these people who can't pay a large accumulation of money that's accrued?
Hey, great question, Ken. I had a mentor when I first started in law that used to say that winning is nothing but collecting is everything. So, first, what do you have to say?
Well, that's what I was just saying a moment ago, Ken, is that sometimes the judgment is non-collectible because the person doesn't have enough funds. No, right now there isn't any waiver of rent or any forgiveness of the rent. It's still owed. That's why we're promoting the rent relief program from the state or from the local entities. And uncollectible, I mean, as far as a judgment goes, that's not collectible. Judgments are good for 10 years. They're renewable for 10-year stints for the rest of the person's life who owes it. If they come into money, there may be a way to come after it. The person who is the landlord who has owed the money might try to garnish their wages or, you know, garnish their bank account, levy against their bank account or something like that. But there are protections in place when the tenants are lower income or even low middle income. And particularly in San Francisco, where cost of living is so high compared to the national average, there's a bit more leeway in proving in a tenant proving that they are unable to maintain, you know, their home and their life or whatever and still pay this judgment. So a judgment may exist but be uncollectible. But it goes on the tenant's credit report and it can be problematic that way.
And Ken, this is Sal. Also during the litigation process, more so in Superior Court than Small Claims Court, the tenant and the landlord will have an opportunity to speak. And it's either going to be through their attorneys or through people that are helping them, or even one-on-one, where the tenant can, in essence, try to prove the inability to pay, you know, and the landlord may then decide, well, why go after this if all I'm going to get is a piece of paper that says I'm owed money? What am I going to do with that? So they can do what Jessica said, but even those things take time and effort, you know, takes resources to collect the judgment. And it may not be worth it. So the landlord may just suck it up and let it go. You know, it helps if the tenant is able to prove their situation. You know, not all tenants are going to be judgment proof. So, you know, there's an opportunity in the litigation process for them to prove their inability to pay. And then, you know, it would just be impractical for the landlord to go forward, really, or, you know, just call them a plaintiff. Really, it would be impractical for a plaintiff to go forward against a defendant that cannot pay and might not be able to pay for a very, very long time. So does that answer your question, Ken? Or if it wasn't even a question, more of a comment, kind of.
Does that answer your question, Ken? Are you happy with that? I think we may have lost Ken.
Okay.
Mark from Palo Alto is on the line. Mark, are you there?
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Hey, Mark, you're on the air.
So I have a single-family home in Napa County, and we have a three-month short-term rental agreement, and the tenant did not pay this month's rent, and the term is supposed to expire at the end of this month. And my question is, does the tenant have the right to remain at the property even though the term has expired at the end of this month? Or is the contract expired by that point and then we're able to move back into the home?
Well, this is David speaking. I'm going to try to answer that first. Historically, if you asked that question before November of 2019, the answer would be they don't have the right to stay. But from November 2019 on, we have now the Rent Control Protection Act of 2019, which gives basically establishes a statewide rent control and establishes good cause. And I don't think, I don't believe that good cause includes that the lease date has expired. So you have to have some other good cause, which we've all mentioned here before. You want to do substantial remodeling that'll take more than 30 days. You want to list and sell the property. You want to move in for your own use or other such good cause.
No, I mean, we do intend on using the property and non-payment of rent. Isn't that a
yes. cause? Non-payment yes, of rent is a good cause. And you could serve the three-day notice. If it's for unfortunately, if it's for March rent, my understanding is you still have to apply to Housing is Key or other government programs, and you can't file an unlawful detainer action unless you've done that 20 days prior to filing the action. So you're going to have to do that. But there isn't an absolute right just because the lease has expired to kick the tenant out. I get that question every day. I probably had that question asked to me this morning almost every day.
David, I just want to clarify. I'm sorry, excuse me just a moment. But David, I want to clarify because I want to make sure that I understand the 2019 Act. I thought that the statewide rent control protection only came into effect after the tenants have been there for 12 months, not on a 3-month short-term lease. Am I wrong?
That's true. So I'm sorry. Did you say they were only there 3 months or that you gave them another 3 months?
It was just three months.
So then you can evict them. I don't know how the court will treat that, but you only have to give a 30-day notice if they've only been there three months, and probably the good cause doesn't apply if it's not applicable under that 2019, where they would have had to live there for 1 year. So Jessica is correct.
Okay. Well, thank you. That's very helpful. I appreciate it.
Thanks for calling, Mark. And I believe we have Barbara from San Mateo on the line. Barbara, you still there?
I'm here, yes.
Hi, Barbara, you're on the air with Your Legal Rights. What's your question?
Hi, my question is, I have a rental property, and the tenants that are in there are very, very delinquent in their rent. They have a history, first of all, of bad checks, so now we only take, you know, cashier's checks. But they're very far behind, and they constantly lie about their situation. They are not destitute by a long shot. And I have a very weak property management company that isn't, they're not aggressive enough. And my question is, number one, can I give them a 3-day notice at this point? With all the COVID regulations and stuff, I'm not sure. If I choose to do that, am I within my rights?
Well, I think the first question here is, has your property management company served them with all of the required notices for the COVID Rent Relief Act? Because if they haven't, and the tenants think that it's COVID-related financial problems, then you're going to end up.
Well, we know that that's not the case.
Okay. You know it's not COVID-related financial problems. All right. Well, you still have to have served all of the COVID notices anyway to meet state law previously. They were supposed to be served by February of 2021. But in any event... we're now under the 2019 tenant statewide rent control and eviction control laws that David was just speaking about a minute ago. So non-payment of rent is a just cause. You'd probably be able to do a 3-day notice to pay rent or quit for the amount. You should probably contact an attorney for a consultation to make sure. But, you know, where they can go into it with more depth.
Okay.
Does that answer your question, Barbara?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, thank you for calling.
Thank you for your help. Bye.
All right. And just a reminder, KALW and Your Legal Rights have been keeping you informed about the law for the last 40 years. But to keep going and to pay our own rent, we have to have your contribution. And this is your time, your opportunity to become a contributor to KALW and to public radio by calling 1-800-525-9917 or go online at kalw.org. Going back to something that we were talking about earlier, we've talked about all of the alternatives you have if you're in trouble, your business is in trouble because of COVID issues or other issues, and all of the programs you can get and the protections there are for tenants. What if you go to the landlord and say, look, I'd like a break on the rent. I'd like, you know, I'm in trouble. My business is falling short. And the landlord just says, no, I want my full rent and I want it now, or you can just pack your bags and go. What are the alternatives that you might have?
Dean, this is Sal. One issue I want to flag for that, for San Francisco rent, renters, that would be a tough question, in my opinion, to make to their landlord, because it's very difficult for the landlord to then come back and raise the rent to the original amount. The longer the tenant is paying this temporary reduced rent, the harder it's going to be for the landlord to say, okay, now it's over. There's no protocol for this, is the problem. And then how much notice would the landlord have to give to say, okay, you know, your rent's going to go back to what it was now that everything's fine. What is it? You know, how much notice? So there's no guarantee that a rent reduction in San Francisco will not become permanent, even if the party's intended to be temporary. Now, I've seen it done before. I've been involved in it, and then the rent did go back up. Whether or not that's ever a legal problem down in the future, who knows? Because in some respects, a lot of respects, the rent ordinance is sort of paternalistic with respect to tenants' rights. They just simply can't waive them. There's some rights that just can't be waived. So the tenant may want to waive it in good faith and believe, but they don't have to act on the rights, but they still have them. So the landlord is kind of wide open there. So it's not that easy to do a rent reduction, at least in San Francisco. San Mateo County, I don't think that problem exists. And David may chime in on that because I think he practices primarily out there.
I think you're right. I've done many of them in San Mateo, but even in San Francisco, I've done a few, but there's a few I've refused to do. So what I see is a difference between two kinds of discounts. If you have a tenant who's, let's say, has been in the apartment for a year and he comes to the landlord and he says, you know, I've been cut back 50% on my work or my salary and whatever, can I have a 25% discount? And so I see that if you could show the tenant has been paying the regular rent, but now he has a COVID-related problem, a landlord agrees to the discount. Others where I've refused to do it is where the landlord comes to me and says, well, I'm renting out this apartment to somebody. It should be $3,000, but I can only get $2,500 now. So I want you to write up a lease that says it's $3,000, but I'm giving him a temporary $2,500. And I've said, well, wait a minute here. I think that violates the rent control because you can't do that. That's a way around the rent control law. That's probably not valid. So I've refused to do that. But on the other one, where the guy's in there for a year paying the higher amount and he wants a temporary decrease, I sort of think that's all right. Now, maybe I'd get shot down anyway.
David, I agree with you. There's a distinction there, and I agree with the way you see the two different types of rent reductions. I'm just leery because I can't find any precedent or authority for raising the rent back up. And so I usually advise against the reductions. There's other creative ways, maybe it still turns out to be a reduction that we've explored. like collecting the full rent check, but then giving a, you know, giving a, giving some money back. But I still feel that the landlord's taking a risk. I feel they're taking a risk. A lot of times they're friends with their tenants. And I guess as long as everything goes good, the friendship is good too. But if things go sour, I think the landlord might be at a disadvantage. But again, I haven't had one blown up and I haven't done many. I've done a handful only. But I think your approach is probably the most conservative approach. And, you know, in that scenario where, hey, I can't get the 3,000, so I'll reduce it to 2,500, so you stay. I think the rent might stay forever at 2,500 in that.
I agree.
Yeah. So I think the way you're handling it is probably the best way that it can be done. And ultimately, it helps keep tenants in place. So it does work. I just don't have a case to point to say, hey, this has been done before. So I'm uncomfortable in that scenario. But I think what you're doing it that way helps keep tenants in place and helps the landlords continue to provide housing. I think it works. Anyway.
I want to just jump in real quick on the concept of like giving a move-in discount or something like that, you know, or a reduced rent for the first, you know, for a first period of time, and then with the base rent being higher. I was at a seminar recently and they mentioned a case called Baychester. I don't know the case citation, but it's basically, you know, among San Francisco landlord tenant attorneys, it's called the Park Merced rule, based on Park Merced apartments. And they had a policy of, you know, setting the rent for, you know, whatever, $3,000 a month, and then giving a move-in bonus of, you know, whatever, a reduction that basically amounted to a month's rent. And that's been determined by the agency in Baychester that's not okay, because basically the base rent is whatever the lower rent was, not the higher rent. If Park Merced was doing it on a case by case basis and looking at each individual tenant and maybe giving that person, you know, giving one by one reductions, it might have been different. But the fact that it was, you know, we're having this move in special, everybody who moves in gets, you know, 2 months free or whatever, didn't work.
Okay, we got Ari from San Francisco, and we're about out of time. If you can give us a very quick question, Ari. Are you there? I think we lost Ari from San Francisco, so as we are very close to our closing time, I'd like to give all of you an opportunity to take about 30 seconds to a minute and just tell us the one thing you would like landlords and tenants to know about this very complicated area. And I know we're in undiscovered territory right now, but sum it up as best you can. Who'd like to go first?
Oh, I will. Dean, okay. Thank you very much. I just wanted to say that, you know, if you're considering, and if you've got tenants or landlords, if you've got a non-payment of rent situation due to COVID financial hardship, you should apply to housing.ca.gov, their Housing is Key program. There's just been an influx of another $136 million. The program says that they have helped over 206,000 households with $2.6 billion of relief already. And they just got more money. So, you know, the application deadline is the end of this month, the 31st. There should be language availability as well. So please apply for the rent relief. Frankly, if it's not used, it's going to have to go back to the federal government.
Yeah, I'll go second here. I would echo what Jessica has said. And believe it or not, I've had many landlord clients who have also refused for some inexplicable reason to apply for either Housing is Key or this new aid program. And I still can't figure out why. And most of my landlord clients are either mom and pop or small groups of individuals who own some units. And they're all been hurting as well during the pandemic. And in some cases, especially the mom and pops have had to put up the houses for sale because they couldn't get rent or they couldn't get enough rent payable. And that's very unfortunate. So there's hardship on both sides here, both for landlords and tenants. And I'm personally happy to see the moratorium ended because, you know, a lot of the landlords in residential didn't have moratoriums on their mortgage payments. Some of them were able to for a short time, but it was a struggle for everybody. And I'm happy to see it go back to more normal times.
This is Sal Timpano here. I agree with seeking assistance, rental assistance, as soon as possible for tenants and for landlords. No reason to wait, no reason to delay. There's really no negative effect to seeking it. It should be done immediately. Also, landlords and tenants should really consider seeking legal assistance and not go this alone. Speaking just for myself, I find myself scrambling at times to keep up with the new rules and how they interact with the old rules. Sometimes I find conflicts. I'm not quite sure how to resolve them. And I'm spending a lot of time on that. And sometimes I'm not getting paid for that. I'm doing it because I need to know. So I think assistance of an attorney is key at this time. Landlord-tenant law has always been complicated. It's very technical. Now it's 10 times more, in my opinion. So landlords and tenants should seek legal advice as soon as they have a problem. You know, consider contacting an attorney, you know, do the Google searches, do whatever reading you can do, talk to people, but consider contacting an attorney for a consult. Some of the consults are free through bar associations. Thank you.
Well, you know, it sounds like, if I can sum up, that this is getting really, really complicated in the landlord-tenant area. It's really important for our listeners to seek legal advice from top landlord-tenant attorneys like David, Sal, and Jessica. Find out what your legal rights are, but then once you know where you stand, it's probably a good idea to sit down around the kitchen table or the conference table with your opposite number. If you're a landlord, talk to the tenants. If you're a tenant, talk to the landlord and try to work things out. Would that be, can I get agreement on that?
Absolutely.
I agree.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, this has been a terrific discussion, very informative as always. Next week, our guest will be Catherine Moore, who will be revisiting the Americans with Disability Act. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM San Francisco. Our guests have been Sal Timpano, David Finkelstein, and Jessica Chilik. And for our guests, and Joe Carr, our producer, our regular host, Justin, who produced this program, thank you, good night, and stay safe.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or you can visit sfbar.org for more information.